We have David Meline, who's the Chief Financial Officer of 3M, and Matt Ginter, who for a long time has led the investor relations operation. I think we, to back up a little bit, I think yesterday was a very interesting day for those who attended the analyst roundtable at the end of the day, had a chance to hear our summaries and takeaways, but it was a day that was more focused on companies trying to outgrow their core markets in a more dynamic way than we've seen in the past. Of course, you know, if you take a look back at the last 10 years, most of the growth initiatives that we heard from companies related to expansion in emerging markets and really repositioning capital to other regions. Now, over the last 24 hours, I think the theme has changed quite a bit where we haven't seen a huge emphasis on repositioning capital in other regions. In fact, we've seen fairly stable investment levels, if not lower investment levels, and a greater focus on companies driving growth from their own internal initiatives, most notably something related maybe to research and development or, really R&D related functions more than anything else. Which I think segues quite well into 3M. 3M is one of those stories, in my opinion, that that still has a little bit to prove on driving growth, outsized growth, above the peer group. And if it's able to prove that with its high margin structure, particularly high gross margin structure, should be able to drive a tremendous amount of shareholder value. We have seen a nice perk up in business at 3M. It is shorter cycle, earlier cycle, as I think most of you know, and it is exposed to a lot of regions like China that are showing signs of life. But I think that is a big, big part of the story. Of course, another big part of the story, too, with 3M is, and feedback that we get from you folks, shareholders, is that capital structure and cash use, really usage of cash and how 3M can really maximize shareholder return through through optimal use of its resources. Because of course, when you have a high return on capital, high margin story like 3M, you're going to kick off an awful lot of cash. And I think you can make a pretty strong argument that for 3M, the success and failure of the company over the next 5 years is going to be is really going to be largely a result of how that cash is deployed and how what kind of return it can earn on that cash, as well as some other obvious initiatives you guys are working on. So I think for this, we'll do our usual audience response to some questions. I think it worked out quite well yesterday, and we will open it up to you folks to ask questions as well. But I would love to spend some time on hearing from Dave and Matt on the different initiatives and how life has changed under Inge's leadership. He's been there long enough now, I think, where we could start to have an early report card of what the style differences and such are. So maybe that's a good place to start, if you don't mind, Dave, and just talking about what's changed, and maybe Matt, you might have some a view on this as well. Is what's changed with 3M? What you think? How the focus or initiatives have changed? What hasn't changed? And what we as shareholders can kind of expect going forward? And then we can carry on into the rest of the questions.
Yeah, very good. So. So for those of you, many of you be aware, we did get a new CEO now a year ago in February of last year. We had the announcement that Inge Thulin would become CEO. First inside CEO after a decade where we had two CEOs that joined 3M, that being Jim McNerney and then George Buckley. And if you look, we spent a very significant part of last year in addition to our normal duties to deliver on results in the current period, we really took the opportunity with Inge to engage the leadership team and relook at the company and how, what was working very well for the company, what were things that we felt we could do better, and we did that with a very specific intent to get a level of engagement with the leadership. So it wasn't a case where new leader, here's my playbook, execute, but rather with the intention of taking the chance to really work with the leadership team. And that was hundreds of people in the end. As we defined and built out the strategies for the company over the next 5 years. In November, then, we had a chance in an investor meeting in St. Paul to roll out the strategies as well as our key metrics and targets for the next period. And I think that, if I segue into respond to your question, Scott, what we did there is if you look at the key strategies that we laid out, they were focused in a number of areas. The first two out of six were focused on the market, on customers, on relevance, on market share, and I would say very strong focus for Inge in that area, an area that 3M has good capability, but we think that there's always a chance for us to improve. And when we think about improvement, the first thing for us that comes to mind is really customer relevance, which is our model works best when we have strong relationships at multiple levels in a customer's organization that enables us to work closely with those customers to understand what their problems are, their pain points are, and work with our technology basket to really to come up with solutions working together with those customers. So I'd say the first point that comes out if you're walking around the hallways of 3M right now is a re-upping of that customer focus and focus on relevance in the market. Second area we looked at in terms of what's working, what could we do better, was around innovation. And certainly, as you've already alluded, innovation for 3M is the core of the business value proposition, always has been, and we expect it always will be. What we found as we had a discussion last year about what's working, we knew things had really improved. If you look at our index of innovation, which is the portion of our sales products that were launched within the last 5 years, we were up now to about a third of our products last year, 33% of our sales last year were products launched in the prior five-year period. Up from 21% when George Buckley joined the company. So very encouraging in terms of the level of innovation, and it's broad across all of our businesses, which has been a key focus area for George. But as we looked at it, we concluded where we had an opportunity, which we're now moving on, is while we've been running pretty steady with 5 to 5.5% of our revenue, we've been investing in R&D. We've seen that index improving very nicely. We felt we had an opportunity on the margin to invest incrementally in some of the longer-term, more disruptive technology opportunities. And so we've got now a very healthy base that's working well for us. But as we talked about it with our leaders, what we could see is that, not surprisingly, as they prioritize their R&D project funding, they tended to be prioritizing first and foremost towards projects which could be seen to be delivering results in the market in the 1 to 3 year time frame. And while there's a piece that's out into the longer term area, we felt that there was an opportunity to move up on that a little bit. So as part of our rollout in November, we indicated that we expect by the end of the five-year period to move our R&D spend up closer in the area of 6% of revenue from what's been somewhere in the 5 to 5.5. And we're doing that by creating a process where we're looking at ideas, a little bit like a venture-type approach where we from the top of the organization, myself, the CEO, the CTO, and the head of strategy are managing what is a fund to really encourage the organization to come forward with ideas that they were unable to fund themselves and that we think could provide some breakthrough type opportunities over time. Third key area of focus under Inge, which is, it's not a change per se, but the area of operational excellence. And if you look at a company which has generated returns on invested capital in the neighborhood of 20%+ for actually a number of decades, if you look at a company that delivers operating margins now consistently above 20% annually, it's it has to be the case that we have a very good discipline with operational excellence, which is part of that model. But we felt there was an opportunity at this stage to raise the visibility a little bit within the company. And so we've taken some steps to do that, where there's a reinvigoration of the focus on Lean Six Sigma in the company, which, as I said, is very well entrenched in the company, but we want to give it a little bit of a boost, in particular focusing in areas such as in our factories outside the U.S., where we've been building a factory footprint around the world to make it where we sell it, places like in our acquisitions, making sure that we're very preemptive in terms of introducing lean principles as we look to integrate acquired companies. And in a third area, where we're standardizing business processes as we roll out a global ERP system, lean principles are very useful to us as we move to a more standardized business process type approach within the company. So another area of focus for us, again, it's not big change, but a little bit of re-emphasis is in that area. Of course, we have, for us, as we globalize the company, the key issue, the war for talent, is alive and well, and we're in the middle of that, so that obviously is something that we have emphasized very heavily, especially in our developing markets, which are a very significant presence for the company. And then finally, I would mention in the context, and I think it's very important for us, in the context of customer relevance, we felt there was an opportunity from the top of the company to really signal to the organization that we'd like to work with them on how to think about prioritization of resource allocation, of emphasis in the company, because we think there's an opportunity for us as we look across the globe, across our businesses, look at trends that we think are developing. We felt that there was an opportunity for us to have a more active dialogue around how to prioritize against opportunities in the company. So we took a chance to, which we again shared in November, to categorize our 40 businesses, our divisions, into some categories which are indicative and directional in nature, but to start to create a dialogue in the organization around exactly those questions. So we designated five of our 40 divisions what we call Heartland, which are significant businesses for the company, very strong franchises. If you look at them typically around the world, you see we have a good presence in the markets in these areas around the world. And those include our electrical markets division, our automotive aftermarket division, our personal safety division, our abrasives and tape. So very strong franchises for the company. And the point here is, as people are running their businesses around the world and they're thinking about resource allocation, it's a way for us to give them some indication as to make sure you're thinking about and understand how we are at the corporate level. Likewise, we have a group of businesses we've called Push Forward, which tend to be businesses that have strong momentum. We see their end market growth opportunities are good. They tend to be ones exhibiting good financial performance, and we think there's opportunity to really accelerate, so we've designated those. And then we have the third category we designated, which we call strategic review. And that's about $2.5 billion of revenue, or about 8% of the company. And what those businesses are if you look at characteristics of businesses in 3M, and you see some common characteristics of things that tend to work very well for us. So if you look at our businesses that are successful, they tend to be businesses which are naturally global in nature. So if because of our global distribution and capability, we do best when we have businesses that have the opportunity to be rolled out globally. Secondly, businesses where we have combinations of technology. So the company has 45 or now 46 technology platforms where we have very deep expertise, as frankly as good as anybody in the world. And our model is one where when we create combinations, novel combinations of those technologies, is how we create breakthrough products and platforms. And so typically we do well when we're combining 2, 3, 4, even 6 of those technologies. So that's a second area where you see some commonality that leads to success. A third area is around customer relevance, which is our model works, as I was saying, when we have sufficient breadth of capability and offerings such that we can get the attention of our customers and have them be interested in dialoguing with us. So sometimes when we're too small in a particular platform, it's difficult for us to be relevant to customers. So when we looked at the businesses from a strategic perspective, and we saw some that in some cases were missing one or two of those elements, those tended to be ones that ended up in our strategic review category. And not surprisingly, if you look at their growth and margin characteristics, they tend to also, in some cases, not perform as well as the average of the company. So we have a process we're going through right now where we're asking our leaders to come back to us and dialogue with us around what should we do about these businesses. And that's, should we combine them with another business? Are we going to fix them standalone? What are we going to do to fix these businesses? Should we consider to exit, to divest, or close? And so we're having a very good dialogue right now that's just started, but it's the right kind of, in our view, it's the right time for us in 3M. The business is very healthy. When we talk about strategic review, oftentimes these businesses are running with typically double-digit operating margins. So for us, they're underperforming. For others, you might consider that quite acceptable. But we feel there's an opportunity in each case to improve, and we're using the chance to really create that kind of a dialogue. And, you know, we'll see. We'll have businesses moving out of that category. I'm sure we'll have some coming in. So it's kind of a continuous process that we're creating, where we have an active management with our teams as we think about how to prioritize our activities to deliver the best performance both in the short term but as equally as important in the long term for the company. So I don't know, Scott, that's maybe a little lengthy, but
no, that's a good,
gets at some of the points you were asking.
Yeah, no, it does.
About.
It's good background. I think now is a good time to go into the audience response system to go to question one, Doug, if you don't mind. And if you currently own the stock, 1, yes, and you're overweight, equal weight, underweight, or 4 is no, you do not own the stock. You can vote on your, if you weren't here yesterday, you just press the button on your ARS system in front of you, and we'll tally it up. So please vote now. Okay, only 21% of the folks who have an active bet here. That's interesting. Similar to last year, you all may recall that 3M was one of the names, also ITW was the other one, who were the most notable out-of-favor stocks that were at our conference last year, and both stocks have performed very, very well in the last 12 months, so it's interesting to see. We'll compare the data and publish that, of course, so you'll get a chance to see it, but it's interesting to see how sentiment can be so critically important. Let's go to the next question, please. What's your general bias towards the stock right now? And remember, this is towards the stock, not necessarily towards the company. What's your positive is 1, 2 is negative, 3 is neutral. Please vote. Okay, substantially better than a year ago. And then let's do the third question. In your opinion, through-cycle EPS growth for 3M will be above peers, which is number 1, in line with peers, and below peers, Let's vote. Okay, about a third of the folks say above peers. There's still some skeptics out there, folks. Well, as I said in my prepared remarks, I think 3M is still a little bit in the proving zone, but you can get, you know, obviously you've got plenty of time to get there. Let's address the issue of raising R&D. I was surprised with all the changes that Inger could have done, given how focused George was on R&D spend, to actually come to the conclusion that, yes, we need to spend more, I thought was a fairly interesting takeaway, because my personal view is it seems like your new product introductions are pretty good and nothing seemed to be broken.
Yeah.
So one of the common themes we saw yesterday, and I think we've seen this over the course of the last 6 months or so, is that companies are across the board investing more in R&D. I think our average company is probably raising R&D spend by 50 basis points to with plans maybe to upwards to about 100 basis points. And you know, in your opinion, is that a reflection of just how tough it is out there and from a global macro perspective, and you can no longer just go and build a factory in China and everybody will show up and buy your product? Is it, from a 3M perspective, is it a function that you truly see opportunities to drive to a higher growth rate or higher margin with that extra spend? Or is it the mere fact that your competitors are spending more and so you need to spend more just to kind of break even on that vitality index?
Yeah, I would say, Scott, amongst those three choices, it's probably the second, which I'll elaborate on, is the primary reason that we concluded that it was worthwhile for us to consider moving up on our R&D spend. So the background here for us, as I've already mentioned, is that the company has done a wonderful job of really reinvigorating our R&D machine. And we have broadly, if you look at, as I was, mentioning earlier, last year a third of our sales were from products introduced within the last 5 years. If you look across our 40 businesses in the company, what's also true is, unlike, 5 or 10 years ago where that new product growth was resident in a handful of divisions, now if you look across the company, virtually all of the businesses have seen their indexes rise such that, most are 20% or above. So we're very pleased with the breadth of development that's going on. The second key focus for the company has been over recent years is to expand the R&D footprint, because inevitably we think to have success over the coming years, it can't be a hub-and-spoke model where you have the highly concentrated R&D activity, but rather a more successful model for us will be when we have a network of R&D centers. So if you look at, we have now 33 centers around the world. Our second largest R&D shop after St. Paul, Minnesota, is now in China. And we have significant R&D activities not only in our mature markets in Western Europe, in Japan, in the U.S., but in places like Taiwan, like Korea, China, India, Brazil, increasingly now in Poland. So it's been a very key focus for us to create a global network, because we work best when we have product development specialists and researchers who are able to meet with customers in local markets who can develop products that are more specifically tailored to the requirements of those markets. And we've been very pleased with the results. So if you look now, half of our new product launches in each of the last 2 years were actually products that were conceived and led by our international labs, and that's up dramatically from even 5 years ago. So you see a broadening effect of the R&D capability, and we're pleased with that. So you're right. We don't think it's broken at all. We think the R&D activity is alive and well in 3M, and what we decided, which, surprised many people, but we think there's an opportunity to move it up to the next level. So if I go back to the points I was just making, what we see as we looked, what's also true is it felt to us like there was an opportunity to edge a little bit further into the zone of more R in to complement the D. And that's really the intent of our effort. And why did we decide that? You can see in our business, it's easier to trace the relationship between R&D outcomes and margins than it is to see it in growth, and it, you know, to your opening comments. So as we had a very robust dialogue in the company about, okay, how do we unlock some of the remaining challenges, our conclusion was that over time we felt that if we move up the R a little bit, that would be one of the potential enablers to enabling a longer-term higher growth path for the company. So it's really as simple as that. There were some additional objectives. Well, so in that incremental R&D, the way we're running it is we've created a venture board, and we called for unfunded opportunities to the business that they weren't able to fund within their plans this year. And we defined those opportunities. We said, come forward with ideas you have that are unfunded, which are things that probably won't come to fruition for a period more like 3 to 7 years, so longer term in nature. Obviously, by definition, higher risk. We had a bias towards ideas that combine multiple technologies, because as I was saying, that's where really we create unique and differentiable products and value. And we also had an interest in looking at projects not only coming out of our more mature labs in the center in St. Paul and in Japan and Western Europe, but we consciously made an effort to try to engage and consider favorably projects coming out of our newer labs, because those newer labs are now maturing, so they tend to start out doing application work, and we want to accelerate their maturation to get to a lot more R in addition to the D. So this is a way for us to accelerate that that objective as well. So, and in the end, we think it'll be a healthier 3M. You'll have to wait a little while to see the results. So given, by definition, the longer-term nature of the research initiatives that we're taking on.
That actually makes a lot of sense. Let's move to the cash reinvestment side and talk a little bit about M&A. It was a shame that the Avery deal didn't work out. Obviously, we were highly supportive of that transaction. And then Ceradyne was a bit of a head-scratcher for most of us.
Yeah.
And not just the asset, but the timing of the asset, and given some of the end markets that they sell into, and given that I think we're, 8 days from sequestration, and there's some defense exposure there. I mean, help us understand, and I know you've been asked this question before, but I'm not sure I've heard an answer that's really makes me feel any better. But help us understand
why
you felt like you needed it and why you needed it then.
Yeah, good. So to provide a context for the decision that we made there. If you look at Ceradyne, which is a company that has deep technology capability, world-class capability in the ceramics area, specifically in an area of the ceramics field where 3M has always been interested in developing its capability, but we really haven't been able to be highly successful in the space. And this is in the area of ceramics where you have the processing is where the materials are in solid form. So think of powders that are used as part of the manufacturing process. 3M has a very significant presence in the ceramic space and has had for decades. So if you look at our product portfolio, almost 10% of our sales until now contain one of the technologies, as we talked about, you know, combinations. One of them is the ceramics area. So we have a very significant ceramics platform, which is one of our foundational platforms in the company. Those ceramic materials where we have deep expertise, the manufacturing processes are in a solution form. So think of liquid form as part of the manufacturing process that we use for our ceramics products.
Right.
So it was an adjacent area of the ceramic space where it requires different capability and very complementary to 3M's. And so we, for quite some time, we knew the company well. We were working to develop our own internal capability. We were unable to achieve that objective.
Okay.
And the circumstances were such that came to pass that we decided to acquire Ceradyne. And what I would say there is the nature of that transaction, that acquisition, which I think can be insightful. So as we look at the acquisition, it's a type of acquisition that's very complementary to our product and technology portfolio, where we can see as we bring the capability into 3M, we'll have a chance to use their expertise and start making those connections with the other technology platforms we have to start to create world-leading, unique opportunities and products. But what's also true in that case is that it's a type of transaction that it'll take some time for you to see those results, because putting together and creating new products to the world is not something that happens overnight. It takes time. So quite honestly, what happened then is, as we looked at it, we have to be quite disciplined to create value when we acquire companies where you have a circumstance like that. You have to get the value equation right, and so the circumstances of the multiple and the price were such that we were able to make that happen at a particular point in time. So that's how that came together. We're really excited about the opportunity, and what we're seeing is not only are we starting to make those connections amongst the technical community, but we're seeing some more immediate opportunities in some end markets where they've got a great portfolio and we might have some customer relationships at a different and perhaps in some cases strategic level where we're able to start to get some immediate traction on that as well.
Well, that's a better answer than the ones I've heard in the past, and largely because you admitted that you've kind of failed to develop a comparable product line, and for buying them.
You know,
I mean, that part of it, I think, has gotten lost in translation. So let's go to the next ARS question, please, and go through the next three, and then we're going to open up to the audience for questions. In your opinion, what should 3M do with excess cash? Bolt-on M&A, larger M&A, share repurchase, dividends, pay down debt, or internal investment? Lots of options there. Please grab your weapon, and let's vote. Wow, okay, share purchase and dividends. All right, we'll have to compare that to last year. I think it's probably pretty comparable. And let's go to the next question, please. Your opinion on what multiple in 2013 earnings, with PE in 2013, should 3M trade? And we've got a pretty wide range of selections here, so please vote. All right, pretty tight band there. And then let's do the last question while we're going through these. What do you see as the most significant investment issue for 3M? Core growth, margin performance, capital deployment, or execution/strategy? This will be an interesting one, I think. Please vote. Okay. 59% core growth. This is very similar to what we saw yesterday. I actually would have expected capital deployment to be a much higher piece of that. So that's that's interesting. Okay, let's open it up to the audience. Anybody have a question? All right. Since we don't have any questions, let's keep going then. So let's address the last slide, core growth.
Sure.
You know, you did lower the targets, or I should say Inge lowered the targets, arguably something much more realistic in a low growth world. give us a sense of your confidence of achieving those,
sure,
those targets.
Sure.
And another way to kind of ask the question is that, you know, how does 3M go from a company that's perceived as more aligned, more or less defensive, to a company that is perceived as, you know, a growthier company like a Danaher, for example, or a Roper, or something that, you know, investors are willing to pay a much higher premium for?
Yeah, so if you look at going back to the work we did last year, one of the key areas that we focused on not only was the strategy, as I've already mentioned, but also our key financial goals for the company over the next 5 years. And what we really tried to do with those, where we rolled out and named four of those as our key goals for the company, we wanted to try to describe very well who 3M is and what is the value proposition of 3M as we put together those key goals and metrics. And so if you look at the goals, what we did is we reaffirmed our goal for double-digit earnings growth in the period, so 9 to 11% annually on average during the 5 years, which compares to the 10, 11% EPS growth we've experienced over the last 5 and 10 years. So consistent going forward. Secondly, we've had an ROIC goal as one of our key metrics. We reaffirm that 20-plus percent ROIC going forward. As I mentioned earlier, that's consistent with a very long track record at 3M. And we think a very important metric for 3M and a key descriptor of the value creation proposition that we have as a firm. The third goal, which was already one of them, which is getting to your question, Scott, we did have an organic revenue goal in place. We kept an organic revenue goal because we think that also, as the audience does, is an important opportunity for 3M. And as we examine that goal, our intent here was to make sure that we put together a plan that we felt was aggressive but also realistic. And so if you look at our performance over the past 5 and 10 years in terms of organic growth, which is at the core of the value proposition of 3M, we're basically an organic innovation machine at heart. We observed that we'd been growing over the period at 1.5 times industrial production growth worldwide. So very, you know, some ups and downs year to year, but if you look over the period, we've been growing at that level. And so then we said, okay, we know we can do that, aggressive but realistic. We think that's the right kind of a baseline to adopt for the company. And so what we then did is we looked at the economic forecasts that we could see over the coming years. And what we observed is that the profession was calling for IPI growth in a range of something like 4.3 to 4.8% over the period versus the 2% growth that occurred over the last decade in industrial production. And so maybe a little cautiously, but we said, okay, we think underlying 3 to 4% IPI is probably realistic for the period going forward. We looked then 1.5 times IPI. We came up with 4 to 6% growth as our goal. So intended to reflect something that we know how to do, we've been able to deliver. We think that's realistic, but it's aggressive. That at the high end is double the growth we've experienced over the last decade, where we grew on an organic basis at 3%. So even though we've been growing 1.5 times IPI, the opportunity available to us has been more muted, and hence that level of performance. So, you know, our thinking is aggressive, realistic, drive to that kind of results. That still means we need to up our growth rate, and we're obviously very excited for the opportunity to demonstrate that we'll be able to achieve those goals.
Let's talk about China, and you'll be one of the few companies that we asked this question to the last couple of days, because I view your China potential to be much greater than a lot of the companies that we cover, and arguably because I think you've maybe under-earned in China or underperformed in China versus probably your opportunity set in the last 10 years. Give us your sense of the potential there and how, you know, is it a function of needing to develop products in China for China and it just takes time to kind of get there, or is it a function of just needing to be much more aggressive on the marketing or distribution? Or
yeah.
I mean, how what's held you back?
Yeah. So if you look at 3M, China's an important part of the company, 8% of our revenue. I think the you know position you're taking could be should be larger. I think that the opportunity is clearly there for us. And what I would say is 3M has taken what I would say, and it's very typical, a pretty patient approach to building our capability in China. So we established the business in 1987. It was the first wholly owned foreign multinational operation that was approved in China. So we're wholly owned in China, which is important. We have great employee loyalty. Our business model values, obviously, intellectual property very highly. We feel most confident as we have a wholly owned operation in managing that issue. And if you look at how the business has developed, very typical of our business model, today in China, we have a outweight position in our business there vis-a-vis the average of the company in infrastructure activities, electronics, and industrial, because that's how the economy is initially developed. And so we feel good about our position there, and we continue to drive the business to grow by investing, by localizing production, by building out our R&D capability, as I was referring to earlier, which we think will be a key element of growth, and that growth will be with a significant focus of China for China. So building out that platform to enable us to participate in the market locally. What's also true now is as economies mature, as is happening now in China, we have a very well-developed approach, which is we accompany the development of the economy. So as their retail channels start to modernize, as their healthcare system and expectations and standards start to be rising, that fits very nicely with 3M's offerings. So we're very focused now on expanding our capability under the umbrella of a very well-developed, successful local operation to now start to penetrate more substantially into what we call domestic market opportunities, which is as the economy's ready for that, we're now really focused and encouraging our domestic businesses, healthcare and consumer, to be really prioritizing their development in that location. And you can see some very good parallels of success. So if you look at our Latin American business, which tends to have now a composition which looks more like 3M on average, it's because we followed that model where we led with infrastructure, we led with industrial, and then, if you will, on top of that, we built our consumer and healthcare businesses. So that's what we're doing now in China, along with a number of other markets, which we think will be a very sustainable model. It's a, you know, to your point, it's a patient model, but we think it's a very resilient one over time.
Very good. Thank you, David. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.